This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Banks Centre for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
The night sky for August 2017. Well, at least the nights are getting somewhat longer, and we do have a lovely part of the heavens to look at in the evening after dark. As darkness falls, the bright star Arcturus in Bootes is setting down towards the western horizon. But that lovely region of sky, containing Deneb in Cygnus, Vega in Lyra, and Altair in Aquila, form what's called the Summer Triangle. The Milky Way's coming past as well, and it's a beautiful region to observe. And not least, just below Cygnus, is a tiny little constellation called Delphinus the Dolphin. If you follow with binoculars from Altair about a third of the way towards Vega, there's actually a dark region of the Milky Way called the Cygnus Rift, and there you might see an upside-down coathanger. Brocky's cluster is the correct name for it, but usually called the coathanger. In fact, on the way, you'll pass the little constellation of Sagitta, the arrow. As the night draws on, gradually, towards the south, rises the constellation of Pegasus, the winged horse, actually upside down from our viewing, with the great square of Pegasus. And that can lead you up to the nearest giant galaxy, the Andromeda Galaxy. If you start at the top left-hand star of the square, called Alpheratz, move leftwards and up a bit to a bright star, around a bit more to a second bright star, and then turn sharp right. You find another star in the way, and beyond that is the little Andromeda Galaxy. And you should see, on a dark, clear night with no moon, a little smudge of white light. Now, above Andromeda is the constellation of Cassiopeia, and that's a W. And in fact, the other way to find Andromeda is to look at the southerly part of the constellation, a V, and that V actually points down to Andromeda as well. So quite a number of nice things to look for, and I pointed out one or two, such as the M13 globular cluster and the double-double in Lyra, with a detail how to find them on the Night Sky website. Well, what about the planets? Well, Jupiter is now 4 months after opposition, but still can be seen low in the southwestern sky after nightfall. It sets around midnight at the beginning of August. As the month progresses, its brightness falls from minus 1.9 to minus 1.7 magnitudes, as its angular size falls from 34 to 32 arc seconds. It lies in Virgo, initially some 8 degrees to the west of Spica, reducing to 4 degrees as the month progresses. And Jupiter will pass Spica on September the 11th, on its journey towards the lower parts of the ecliptic. Sadly, next year, it will only reach an elevation of some 25 degrees when due south, and in the following 2 years, just 18 degrees, before it begins to move back towards the more northerly parts of the ecliptic, where we see it best. Even so, with a small telescope, one should easily be able to see the equatorial bands in the atmosphere, sometimes the great red spot, and up to the 4 of the Galilean moons as they weave their way around it. Now Saturn. Saturn came into opposition on June the 11th, and so will now be at its highest elevation due south as darkness falls. It shines initially at magnitude plus 0.3, falling to plus 0.4 during the month, and has an angular size of about 17 arc seconds. With an angle of 26.8 degrees inclination to the line of sight, the rings are virtually as open as they ever can be. Their maximum tilt, at 27 degrees, will come in October, the first time since 2002. Saturn will cease its westward retrograde motion on August the 25th. And again, it's sad that Saturn, now lying in the southern part of Ophiuchus between Sagittarius and Scorpius, only reaches an elevation of some 17 degrees above the horizon when due south, so hindering our view of this most beautiful planet. Mercury. Well, given the very low western horizon, Mercury showing an 8 arc second disk and shining at magnitude plus 0.4 might just be seen after sunset at the beginning of August. Binoculars may well be needed, but please do not use them until after the sun has set. It passes between the Earth and the Sun, that's called inferior conjunction, on August the 26th. Well, Mars. Mars passed behind the Sun in July, but will be hidden in the Sun's glare all month, so cannot be observed. Venus is visible in the east before dawn this month, rising about 3 hours before sunrise. Its magnitude dims slightly during the month from -4 to -3.9, as its angular diameter shrinks from 14.5 to 12.5 arc seconds. However, at the same time, its illuminated phase increases from 74 to 83%, which explains why the magnitude does not drop too much. Its elevation before sunrise is greatest on the 2nd of August, when Venus lies close to the open cluster M35 in Gemini. Well, finally, what about some of the highlights of the month? Well, August is a good month to find the globular cluster in Hercules and spot the double-double in Lyra. These are two very nice objects to spot with binoculars in the eastern sky well after dark this month. Two-thirds of the way up the right-hand side of the four stars that make up the keystone in the constellation of Hercules is M13, the best globular cluster visible in the northern sky. Just to the left of the bright star Vega in Lyra is the multiple star system Epsilon Lyrae, often called the double-double. With binoculars, a binary star is seen. When observed with a telescope, each of these two stars is revealed to be a double star, hence its name. August is actually a good month to observe Neptune with a small telescope. It actually comes into opposition, that's when it's nearest to the Earth pretty well, on the 2nd of September, so it will be well placed both this month and next. With a magnitude of plus 7.9, Neptune, with a disk of 3.0 arc seconds across, can be easily spotted in binoculars lying in the constellation Aquarius. I show both an overall chart on the night sky page and also a finder chart in detail of where it lies. It will rise to an elevation of 27 degrees when due south, which is around midnight. Given a telescope of 8 inches or greater aperture and a dark transparent mite, it should even be possible to spot its moon, Triton. The moon and Saturn. Late evening on the 2nd of August, the waxing moon will be seen to the upper right of Saturn, with Antares, the orange-red star, lying down to its lower right. Now, of course, we do have one of the year's best meteor showers this month. On the mornings of the 12th and 13th of August, look out for the Perseid meteor shower. The meteors are produced by debris from the comet Swift-Tuttle. Probably the early morning of the 12th of August will give us the best chance, if clear, of viewing the sky. But the peak is quite broad, and it's well worth observing on the nights before and after. Most meteors are seen looking about 50 degrees from the radiant, which lies between Perseus and Cassiopeia, and look up towards the zenith. This year, a gibbous moon rises before midnight, so it will be low in the sky for some time in the early hours of the 12th. So it's probably best to try and observe the Perseids as soon as it's really dark. Moonlight will hinder our view, but it should be possible to spot many meteors. Now, a rather nice event on the 16th of August, in daylight from about 0740 to 0840 BST, because the moon is going to occult Aldebaran, the orange star that lies between us and the Hyades cluster. Now, that should be visible with a telescope, but obviously keep it well away from the sun. Those times, 0740 to 0840, are for London, and they will vary somewhat across the country. In a line from Leverborough on the Isle of Harris across to Wick, that's in northern Scotland, a grazing occultation should be seen at 08:01 BST. On the 19th of August, before dawn, if it's clear, you should be able to see Venus just 2 degrees above a very thin, waning crescent moon. And on the 25th of August, after sunset, Jupiter will lie below a thin, waxing crescent moon. And the object I've chosen to describe on the website this month on the surface of the moon is called the straight wall, or the Rupert's rectar. It's best observed either 1 or 2 days after first quarter, so that's around the 30th of August in the evening, or a day or so before third quarter, around the 14th of August in the evening. To be honest, it's not really a wall, but a gentle scarp. And finally, as Patrick Moore has said, neither is it a wall, nor is it straight. So I do hope you have some good observing this coming month.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now for our Antipodean listeners, here is Claire Bretherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the August Jodcast from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. Mercury finishes its best evening appearance of the year this month. At the beginning of August, it sits low in the west after dark, just above Regulus, the brightest star in Leo, setting around 7:45. By mid-month, it will disappear from view, lost in the evening twilight as it heads back towards the sun in our skies. Jupiter is a little further north, midway up our northwestern skies. It is slowly moving below and towards the right of Spica over the course of the month. Both are quickly dropping down our evening skies, with Jupiter setting at around 11 p.m. at the beginning of August, but by around 9:30 p.m. at the end. Further around still, Saturn is high in the northeast after dark, with Antares above and to the left, and remains in our sky for most of the night. A waxing gibbous moon passes close to Saturn on the 3rd and 31st of the month, whilst on the evening of the 25th, a thin 3-day-old crescent moon will sit just below Jupiter. It's a busy time for the moon this month. If you're an early riser, look out for a partial lunar eclipse on the morning of the 8th of August. Maximum eclipse is at 6:20 a.m, when just under a quarter of the moon's disk will be in the shadow or umbra of the Earth. The rest of the moon will be in the penumbra or part shadow, and therefore appear dimmer than normal. From Wellington, the moon sets in the west at 7:14 a.m, a few minutes before the end of the umbral phase. On the 22nd of August, the moon will pass directly between the Earth and the Sun, causing a total solar eclipse. The eclipse path will run across the United States, but unfortunately no part of it will be visible from New Zealand. The next total solar eclipse visible from our shores won't be until July 2028. Last month we looked at some of the amazing objects in Scorpius and Sagittarius towards the centre of the Milky Way. This month we'll move along a little from our galaxy's bright centre to where it passes overhead through Centaurus, the Southern Cross, and the constellations of Carina, Vela and Puppis that make up the great ship Argo Navis. Crux, the Southern Cross, lies on its side after sunset in the southwestern sky, with the Diamond Cross and False Cross below. Above Crux are Alpha and Beta Centauri, the brightest stars in the constellation of Centaurus. Known as the pointers, they guide our eye to Gamma Crucis, the star at the top of Crux, and help us to identify the true Southern Cross. To the right of the pointers, and just outside the main band of the Milky Way, is a spectacular globular cluster Omega Centauri. This is by far the largest and brightest globular cluster in the Milky Way, appearing as a fuzzy star to the naked eye. With binoculars, it is an even more stunning sight, spanning almost a full degree of the sky, twice the diameter of the full moon, whilst a small telescope will show a shimmering ball of stars, with many individual stars visible towards the outskirts. Close to Beta Crucis in the Southern Cross is a different type of star cluster. NGC 4755, also known as the Jewel Box, is an open cluster around 6,500 light-years away. It is rich and bright, with the stars showing an array of different colours, highlighted by an orange-red supergiant. At magnitude 4.2, the Jewel Box can easily be seen with the naked eye. It is dominated by an A-shaped asterism of bright stars, which is observable with binoculars, whilst even a small telescope will reveal a stunning sight. The name the Jewel Box comes from Sir John Herschel's vivid description of the cluster as a casket of variously coloured precious stones. The colours of these stars tell us how hot they are. The red stars are the coolest, with temperatures around 3,000 Kelvin. Yellow stars like our sun are closer to 6,000 Kelvin, whilst the hottest, bluest stars reach temperatures of 30,000 Kelvin or more. In order to get this hot, these stars have to use a huge amount of fuel very quickly, so they don't live very long. They live fast and they die young. The most massive live for just a few million years. The fact that NGC 4755 still contains a number of these hot blue stars tells us that it is relatively young. In fact, it is one of the youngest star clusters known, with an estimated age of just 14 million years. Just to the left is a dark patch known as the Coalsack Nebula. This is a huge cloud of interstellar dust and gas some 700 light-years away. It is so thick and dense that it obscures the light from more distant stars, appearing as a darkened area against the bright backdrop of the Milky Way. Aboriginal astronomers have observed the Coalsack for at least 40,000 years, whilst to Maori here in New Zealand it is known as Te Patiki, or the Flounder. Below the Coalsack, at the tip of the Diamond Cross asterism in Carina, is the Theta Carinae Cluster, or IC2602, an open cluster containing around 60 individual stars. At magnitude 1.9, it is the third brightest open cluster in the sky, and is often known as the Southern Pleiades, although it is still much fainter than its northern counterpart. The cluster spans around 50 arc minutes, around 1.5 full moon diameters, so it is best viewed with binoculars or a low-powered telescope, giving a wide field of view. Around 4 degrees to the right of Theta Carinae is the famous NGC 3372, the Eta Carinae Nebula, a huge cloud of glowing gas estimated to be around 7,500 light-years away. At 4 times the size of the Orion Nebula, it is one of the largest nebulae of its type in our skies. With the naked eye, you'll be able to pick out the brightest central areas, but with binoculars, you should be able to see Eta Carinae itself as a golden star within the nebula. Eta Carinae is actually a system of at least 2 stars, which combined are around 5 million times more luminous than our sun. The largest has around 90 times the sun's mass, and is so bright that the radiation pressure it produces is almost too strong for the gravity holding it together, causing a constant stream of material out into space. In the morning skies, Venus is now rising around 5 a.m. The moon will pass nearby on the 19th, sitting just above Venus in the northeast at sunrise. The two will move towards the north by mid-morning, providing a perfect opportunity to try and spot Venus in the daylight, with Venus sat just to the right of a thin, waning crescent moon. Wishing you clear skies from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.